A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 1, 1987, in the series The Covenant of Grace, The Salvation of the World, entitled Grace and the Healing of Personality. The scripture readings are Galatians 3, verses 6 through 14 and 26 through 29, and 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 13 and 14. The texts for the sermon are Galatians 3, verses 28b and 29, and 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 14. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Suppose that the parable of the prodigal son is the most familiar and best loved of the stories that Jesus told. And it seems that we can return to it again and again, always amazed that there is another angle from which to appreciate it and from which to gain some insight. The prodigal son goes out into the far country, having declared his independence, rejected his father, taken his inheritance, and he promptly messes up his life badly. He finds himself in dire straits, and as he comes to himself, he says, "You know, the hired servants of my father are better off than I am." And we applaud his growing self-awareness. And so he begins to make plans to return, and he rehearses a speech that he will render to the Father when he comes. "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired servants." And that really is a wonderful response on the part of this young man. He was showing a proper humility. He was evidencing a growing self-awareness. There is a kind of healthy sense of responsibility about him. He's not blaming his father, he's not blaming his mother, he's not blaming his job, he's not blaming his circumstances. He made his choice. He pursued his own path. He got himself into trouble. He owns the trouble. He says, "I did it. It was I, no one else." He is ready to return humbly, and he asks no mercy, he asks no quarter. He acknowledges that he has given up the prerogatives of sonship. He asks only one thing: "Hire me as one of your paid servants." And in so doing, he does what I believe the vast majority of all religious exercise and practice does, whether that be the religion of Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Hinduism. And I believe he does, in that approach to his father, what the vast majority of the Christian church does, be it Eastern Orthodox, Roman Catholic, or Protestant. For religion in general is a religion that comes to God with something in one's hand and only the request to prove oneself. We may talk about grace. We may acknowledge that we are justified through faith by grace alone. We may acknowledge our human incapacity, our unfaithfulness, our fickleness. We may know intellectually in our minds that it is only by the grace of God that we will be saved. We sing about it. We confess it in our creeds. It is proclaimed week by week. But in our actual living out of our religious faith, I swear to you, there is a great deal of it that is precisely the approach of the prodigal to his father. What is he saying? Well, he's saying so much that is good and right. His whole posture is right. His humility is right. His sense of personal responsibility is right. His coming to his father in the manner in which he comes is right. But what does he say? What does he say? Is he not saying finally down underneath it all, Dad, give me a chance to prove myself? And what else is so much of our religious exercise and practice than that demonstration of our own justification in the presence of God? How else do we operate really in the depths of our being while we are saying grace than in that compulsive drivenness to vindicate our own existence, to secure our life, to justify ourselves? I am not worthy. I've blown it. It's my responsibility. I acknowledge all of that. But please don't just grace me and forgive me. Please give me a chance to prove myself. And the Galatians were trying to prove themselves after they had received the gospel of Jesus Christ, after Paul had preached to them salvation by grace alone, after Paul had placarded Jesus Christ crucified before them, and they had embraced him by faith, and they had experienced the power of the Spirit and the new life. After all of that, they began to develop the institutional forms of religion and the ritual obligations, and add to Jesus all that had come from the old tradition. And Paul said to them, you have fallen from grace. If you want to do it that way, you're going to do it by law and not by grace, because you can't mix those two principles. You cannot combine the free gift of God's salvation with a self-help program that can demonstrate your intrinsic righteousness. You cannot earn what God has given. So he says to them, if you want to do it by the law, you've got to do it by the whole law. And if you're going to do it by the law, you'll never be done with it. You'll have to do it today, and you'll have to do it again tomorrow, and you'll have to do it again the next day, and you'll have to do it every day that you're alive, because you never will be done with the law. It will stand over you with its obligation and with its threat from now until your last breath. Those that live by the law shall do the things that the law commands. He says, why would you do that when Jesus has already become accursed for you, when he has borne your sin in his body on the tree, when what is offered to you is not a way by which you may vindicate your existence, a way by which you may justify yourself, a way by which you may finally prove yourself, but what is offered to you is a full and complete salvation through Jesus Christ. You have put on Christ in baptism. And you have been connected to Abraham, and you are one with the people of God down through the centuries, that one covenant people who live by grace alone. Why will you now double back upon yourselves in what is underneath an effort to vindicate yourself? Well, perhaps you say to me, how often will you tell us that? And I will respond, not over once a week. But it is one thing to hear that. It is one thing in the head to know that. It is another thing to live by it. It is probably as difficult as anything in the world to live by grace and to go before the whole world as a forgiven person by the grace of God in Jesus Christ alone. And I was struck with that this week once again when I received a letter in response to a letter I had written. This is a letter from a gentleman. It's in another state. Never mind trying to figure out who it is. A good person. A person in whom I believe. A person for whom I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter in the light, in the wake of what we might call today a white-collar crime that has gotten him incarcerated. I wrote a letter to the parole officer saying, I believe in the essential decency and goodness of this person. And I do. And this person has, from a child, listened to the proclamation of the grace of God. And now he is fortunate enough to have fallen badly. Most of us go through life with a mask intact. We may stumble and fall, but as long as the bruise is under our clothes, nobody notices. It's only when you bang into the door and bruise your forehead and break your nose that people say what happened. But whether it's under our clothes or on our forehead, we are all the same. There is no difference. This man, fortunately, blew it so bad that everybody who's important to him knows it. And I got this letter of thanks. It says, I have repented and have asked God, have asked for God's forgiveness and mercy. Well, that's good. I thank God daily for His giving of His Son to die on the cross for my sins. It's good. I have a very hard time forgiving myself. I can understand that. Until such a time that I can get out of here and make an attempt to make amends to those whose lives I've affected, I certainly could not forgive myself. I can understand that. I do not feel I could ask others to forgive me until I have at least attempted to make some type of amends. This time in my life is very hard and very painful. I can understand that. All of his life, he's heard the gospel just like you. And then one day, I might even say with the best of intentions, it all falls apart. And he's broken. And those close to him are broken. And there's enough pain to go around. And he says, I can't forgive myself. And I certainly couldn't ask anybody else to forgive me until I can get out of here and make amends. Oh, Father, let me come home, not as your son. Just let me be a hired servant. Just give me another chance to prove it. We talk about grace, but that's where we live. Justifying ourselves in the presence of others. And vindicating our existence before God because we do not really believe in the radicality of the grace of God. The love of God was demonstrated in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. The gospel of Jesus Christ is good news to the ungodly and to the unrighteous and to the unholy. And this poor man can't forgive himself, and he can't ask me to forgive him until he can make amends. How long will it take him to make amends? And if he makes amends and finally gets even with the board, what about tomorrow and next year? Those that live by the law may finally succeed in keeping the law in an outward form, but they'll live like this, worried always that tomorrow may spell a different story. There is no joy. There is no salvation for those who live like this, worrying about the next deviation to the right or to the left. You've heard the story, I'm sure, of the young man who left home and now, after years and alienation and brokenness with his father, was returning on the train. And the gentleman next to him noticed that he was especially restless, casting about to the right and to the left. And finally, in conversation, the young man told his story, and he said, "I haven't been home for years, and I don't even know if my father's there. But I wrote to him and said, I want to come home. And if you'll receive me, just tie a white handkerchief on that old oak tree a little bit up from the station." And as they approached, he said to the gentleman next to him, "I can't even bear to look." And when the old tree came into view, the man put his arm around him and said, "Son, there's not a handkerchief in the branch. There are 1,000 handkerchiefs hanging from every branch." The gospel is so radical, it's too good to be true. It's so amazing that we hardly dare take it in. And so we always shoot for second best. Just make me a servant. Just give me a chance to show you. When all the time, all he wants to do is take you in his arms and hug you and shower you with kisses and tell you that there's nothing you've ever done and nothing you can ever do, nothing in all this world that you can ever do that'll break that cord of love by which he loves you from all eternity to all eternity. Alleluia. And thank God.